Hello, and welcome to our program, National Geographic, brought to you by OWL Radio and Low Vision Resource Center. I am Karen Stokes, and my co-host is...
I'm Dave Stokes.
And during the next half hour, we will be reading articles from National Geographic's here on OWL Radio. Dave will be first.
Story about a humpback whale. A humpback whale swam halfway around the world, and his name is Frodo. A record-breaking ocean journey from the Mariana Islands to Mexico shows that whale migration patterns are more complex than we thought. A battle-scarred male humpback whale named Frodo has completed the longest known movement for his species, a new study says. Between 2017 and 2018, the animal swam nearly 7,000 miles from Saipan in the Mariana Islands to Sayulita, Mexico, according to a new study published by Endangered Species Research. A female humpback that swam just over 6,000 miles from Brazil to Madagascar in 2001 held the previous record. When biologist Nico Ransom delved deeper into the male's astonishing trans-Pacific journey, she discovered it had also appeared near Russia's Commander Islands in 2010 and in 2013, and that the Russian scientists had named him Frodo after the Lord of the Rings character who undertakes an epic quest. Not only did Frodo set the distance record, he also flipped the script on what we think of as humpback's typical migration patterns, says study leader Ransom, a biologist at Murdoch University in Perth, Australia, and founder of La Orca de Sayulita, a whale watch and research company. The vast majority of the estimated 7,500 humpbacks that breed off western Mexico migrate north to Alaska and Canada to feed during the summers. Frodo, on the other hand, circumnavigated the entire North Pacific, and as Ransom would discover, he's not alone. I've been obsessed with whale migration for years, says Ransom. To find out that some of them go to Russia, I mean, it's mind-blowing. A regular route. A few years ago, Ransom noticed Russian whales showing up in Mexico. She identifies individual animals via an online whale identification database called Happy Whale, which keeps a log of 30,000 humpbacks, black and white fluke patterns that are as unique as a human's fingerprint. It's like Facebook for whales, says study co-author Ted Cheeseman, a biologist at Southern Cross University in Lismore, Australia, who co-founded Happy Whale in 2015. Hundreds of scientists and dozens of whale-watching companies use the database, which has a 97% to 99% accuracy rate for identifying humpbacks, Cheeseman says. Study co-author Mary Hill, a biologist at the Cooperative Institute for Marine and Atmospheric Research, studied the photo she took of Frodo in the Marianas in 2017 on Happy Whale. She says such open collaboration is the key to understanding how the breeding and feeding grounds are connected, which is critical for the protection and conservation of humpback whales. Frodo's novel journeys spurred Ransom, Hill, Cheeseman, and their colleagues to dig into Happy Whale's archives to see whether other humpbacks are making trans-Pacific migrations. They found 117 individuals that migrated from Mexico to feeding areas in Russia between 1998 and 2021. Prior to this research, only 11 whales had been sighted in both Russia and Mexico. People spotted more than one-third of these Russian whales in multiple years in Mexico's breeding grounds. Since 2021, Ransom has documented several more Russian whales in Mexico, including mothers with calves, meaning Frodo's seemingly odd migration is likely a regular route. Why go so far? Whales may be making these lengthy trips to find mates, possibly as a relic from the whaling industry, said Ransome. Numbers of these 50-foot-long maritime mammals hunted for their oil, meat, and baleen had fallen to an estimated low of 1,200 animals in the entire North Pacific, a heavily whaled region, by the 1960s. The population in western North Pacific is still endangered, according to NOAA, and Hill's surveys of the Marianas from 2015 to 2018 determined that these islands are indeed a missing breeding ground for humpbacks. Traditionally, whales that feed in Russia migrate south to breed in Japan, the Mariana Islands, and the Philippines. But with fewer whales around, males have had to roam further to find a mate, even across the ocean to Mexico, Ransome says. They also fight over females, as evidenced by Frodo's many scars, she adds. A different tune. These newly revealed migration routes could also explain why humpbacks have been recorded singing almost daily in the mid-Pacific between Hawaii and Mexico. Songs in such an unusual location were considered anomalies until 2021. A survey found the same phenomenon. The recordings support the idea that whales are regularly undertaking huge migrations across the world. These whales are always surprising us, says Hetty Pearson, a marine biologist at the University of Alaska Southeast, who was not affiliated with the research. Frodo's journey, she said, helps to solve some of that mystery of how a similar song is heard across the whole North Pacific. It just teaches us that we can never assume too many things, says Pearson. As for Frodo, he hasn't been spotted since Ransom photographed his fluke in 2018. But she wouldn't be surprised if he's still making epic voyages across the largest ocean on Earth.
Next, history and culture. Carnival versus Mardi Gras. What's the difference? One can last days or weeks. The other packs all the fun in a single day. Carnival seasons in Venice, Italy, and Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, are among the best known and most popular. There's also Cologne Carnival in Germany, Nice Carnival in France, Ururo Carnival in Bolivia, Binche Carnival in Belgium, and Spain's Tenerife Carnival in the Canary Islands, and festivities across the Caribbean from Cuba to Trinidad to Tobago. But only one place is known worldwide for Mardi Gras. That's New Orleans, home to the longest frolicking season that begins with Carnival and ends with the famed Mardi Gras. The difference in the celebrations lies in the details. The most important carnivals around the world are in New Orleans, Rio, and Venice, says Errol Laborde, a New Orleans-based carnival and Mardi Gras historian. Rio is more of a dance and parade kind of carnival. Venice is more of a visual, costume kind of carnival. Rio doesn't have throws like we do in New Orleans. While all the events have their own special something, at the heart of the traditions is the celebration of life. Simply having fun before the season of penitence under the Christian faith known as Lent. Carnival in Brazil and Mardi Gras in New Orleans are very different, but deep down they have the same essence. Andressa Trevelyan, a native Brazilian travel blogger who has visited Louisiana's carnival, explained in an email, "No accessories are thrown to the crowd. There is no typical carnival food or drink in Brazil, unlike what happens with the king cake in New Orleans." Arthur Hardy, the founder of Arthur Hardy's Mardi Gras Guide, knows a thing or two about carnival and Mardi Gras. It burns him up when people, even people in New Orleans, confuse the two. Carnival is a season. Mardi Gras is a day, says Hardy. The glossy Everything You Want to Know Guide has been published for 48 years with plenty of factoids and information about Louisiana balls, kings, queens, and other traditions. The role of crews. In New Orleans, there are carnival organizations known as crews that host formal balls, costume balls, parties, receptions, and parades. Some are super crews, others are mid-sized crews. Still others are sub-crews, and there are micro-crews. Some parades include specially built themed floats. Lots of the parades have throws. Stuffed float riders tossed to the parade goers, who like to collect whatever they can get their hands on, especially plastic beads and parade-specific items. The crew of muses shares individually decorated women's high-heel shoes. The crew of Zulu no longer tosses their signature throw to prevent injuries. These days, riders in this mostly black crew place hand-painted coconuts in the hands of revelers. Carnival in New Orleans and elsewhere in Louisiana is no longer than those other in other places because it is strictly tied to the Lenten season. It starts on January 6th, Epiphany, the holiday that commemorates the day the three wise men or kings paid a visit to baby Jesus in Bethlehem, offering gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Celebrations this year conclude with Mardi Gras on February 13th, the day before Ash Wednesday, which marks the start of Lent, a day that changes from year to year. Carnival in New Orleans was 48 days last year. This year, it's 48 days. Businesses, street performers, and vendors who count on carnival to make a living don't like short carnival season. It means less time to make money. Bakeries in New Orleans bake scrumptious king cakes with and without filling, all covered with traditional Mardi Gras colors, purple, green, and gold. One bakery might make 500 king cakes a day. 500 cakes a day for 2 weeks is far different from the revenue they might make during a month-long season. If you want to blame somebody for that, blame the Pope, Hardy says with a laugh. Fun packed into a single day. As Hardy says, Mardi Gras is a single day. It's always 47 days before Easter, so the Mardi Gras date changes with the church calendar. The day before is the next to the last day of Carnival, Lundi Gras, or Fat Monday. Mardi Gras translates to Fat Tuesday. Some call it Shrove Tuesday. Most call it the greatest free party on earth, or the greatest free show on earth. The mayor's Mardi Gras Advisory Council plans an official parade season, designated by law as the 12 days before Mardi Gras. Each year, parade goers eagerly anticipate the crew parade themes. Some always focus on a fantasy. Irish travels the world. Some have celebrity kings or queens. Actor Kevin Dillon of the movies Phantom and Entourage is this year's king of the crew of Bacchus, named after the one Egyptian queen nearly everyone knows, the crew of Nefertiti, has a family parade with singer Tariona Tank Ball of musical group Tank and the Bangas as their queen. She'll lead their Bloom Where You Are Planted parade. Musicians Flo Rida and Sting aren't kings with the crew of Endymion, but they will perform at the glitzy Endymion extravaganza party attended by thousands. There are carnival activities across Louisiana. The crews of the Hyacinthians, Rose and Humam. The Baton Rouge region has own set of parades, including the Mardi Paws dog parade, the crew of Spanish Town, and the crew of Orion. Monroe and West Monroe partygoers enjoy the Twin Cities Crew de Reverie Mardi Gras Parade and the crew of Janus. People in Lafayette give a nod to carnival elsewhere with the crew of Carnival in Rio Mardi Gras Parade and the crew of Canelas, loosely translated as the crew of scoundrels, intended to welcome the riffraff, the masses, anybody and everybody. In New Orleans, Carnival and Mardi Gras are weeks of having a good time. Residents and visitors choose what a good time means for them. They can go places where anything might happen and everything might be seen. Some avoid parades and opt for the balls and parties. The parades also can be seen at WWL Louisiana Parade Tracker app and WDSU Parade Tracker and NOLA.com. Everyone knows it's an important part of the culture. It's also big business. Economic impact. A recent economic impact study prepared New Orleans and Company, the Mayor's Advisory Council, and Tulane University shows tremendous impact on the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana. There's a direct and indirect impact of the city of $891,202,780 and a final fiscal benefit of $28 million. The state gets about $14 million in taxes. Compared to any other event here or elsewhere, there's no other event like Carnival. It's unreal, and we can do this every year. It's a masterful execution. It's the best and most complex event we have. There's a saying in New Orleans that captures the season. Le saisis le bon temps roule.
Yeah.
Let the good times roll.
Okay. And now from science, we have an interesting item. Extending the number of years that people are healthy enough to participate in activities like playing with their grandchildren is a focus of health span researchers. It's not your lifespan you need to worry about, it's your health span. Unlocking the secrets for living more years disease-free is increasingly the target for longevity researchers. We're living much longer than our ancestors, but is that always a good thing? With many people living well into their late 70s or beyond, more of us are also spending a greater portion of our lives, sometimes a decade or more, saddled with physical and mental health conditions that can make it challenging to accomplish the tasks of daily life. Improving the quality of our twilight years is a growing area of inquiry among biologists and other longevity researchers who are working to boost the number of our disease-free years, a concept formerly known as health span. That term first showed up in medical journals more than 30 years ago. Loosely defined as years free of disease, but the concept has become more mainstream among clinicians and patients alike. And its definition has broadened to focus more on years without health conditions that would severely impede daily activities. Treated hypertension, for example, would not significantly affect health span, unlike a stroke or dementia, says Harvard Medical School physician scientist Sharon Inouye, who focuses on aging issues. The targets of researchers like Inouye are numerous: understanding the underlying mechanisms for aging, working to identify health-promoting genes, and zeroing in on steps we can take in our daily lives to improve our health span. It's certainly possible to live healthier even as we live longer. Nir Barzilini says we can learn as much from looking at health and longevity of the centenarians he works with at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York. In academic parlance, his healthy study participants have what's called compression of morbidity. They're sick for a very small portion of their lives. They just don't live longer. They live much healthier. They got diseases 50 years after their friends and 30 years after their children's friends. But how can the rest of us get there? Some of those centenarians' good luck comes from envy-worthy genetics. Studying their genetics is tantalizing, he says, since pinpointing which genes are linked to age-related disorders can lead to drugs that mimic their effects for those who weren't lucky in the gene pool. Barzalia's research has particularly focused on the genes that modulate our good cholesterol and help us stay healthier in a variety of ways. His centenarian study participants are much more likely to have a specific variant of the cholesterol-controlling CETP gene, and those patients tend to live longer with better brain functions, he says. Emulating that gene's effect is now a target of ongoing research. With such drugs in our arsenal in the future, Barzalini says humans can and will improve their health span, particularly if they follow current recommendations for modifying diet, exercise, and social interactions. Lifestyle tips to live healthier longer. Overall, the most cutting-edge developments when it comes to health span depend on your perspective, says Inoue, who also directs the Aging Brain Center at Harvard-affiliated nonprofit Hebrew Senior Life. If you talk with a longevity researcher, they will wax eloquent on the latest drugs being studied to enhance longevity, mostly in non-human models or animals at this stage, she says, adding, to me, the most important work in health span focuses on the importance of prevention. Eating a diet rich in fruits and vegetables and low in carbs is important, Inoue says, alongside keeping mentally active and socially engaged with activities like volunteering, regular aerobic and strength exercise, and avoiding tobacco and excess alcohol. Recent research in JAMA, Internal Medicine, where Inoue serves as editor-in-chief, shows that diet, exercise, brain games, and other steps can significantly help preserve brain health. Good sleep also remains essential, even if it's something you need to continually work on, adds, geroscientist Matt Kiberlin, formerly of the University of Washington and now CEO of the Seattle-based biotech OptiSpan. Poor sleep increases the risk of developing numerous disorders, including type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, poor mental health, and even early death, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The broad strokes of a healthy diet are well documented, but different strategies may work better for certain individuals. Kiberlin adds, whether it's a Mediterranean diet, which is high in fruits, veggies, and whole grains, or approaches like intermittent fasting or a low-carb, high-fat, ketogenic diet, Kiberlin says there should always be a focus on what feels right for you. What do longevity researchers do for themselves? Scientists steeped in the latest research on the biology of aging don't all adopt the same lifestyle choices themselves, and some even make personal choices that step outside the bounds of what the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved, which may come with some unknown risks. At age 68, Barzalini's health regime includes daily exercise, intermittent fasting, good sleep, maintaining social activities, and taking a widely prescribed diabetes drug called metformin that some aging researchers believe attenuates age-related diseases. In animals, the drug appears to work partly by improving the body's response to insulin, with knock-on effects for cellular aging and combating cognitive decline. Barzali says he takes the medicine off-label since the FDA has not approved the drug specifically to treat aging. Kiberlin, who's in his 50s, has turned to a different off-label medication, an immunosuppressant called rapamycin, that was originally approved by the FDA for organ transplant patients, When taken in low doses, kyberlin says it essentially tricks cells into turning down growth-promoting signals and turning up stress resistance, which then seems to halt or even reverse cognitive and functional decline in animals. His research as co-director of the long-term dog aging project and other work in animals suggests that it shows promise. In mice, for example, the drug can expand lifespans by as much as 60%. But results in rodents often are not replicable in humans. Moreover, since these drugs aren't yet approved for age-extending use in humans, the data on potential long-term side effects in otherwise healthy people remains unknown. People should weigh the risks and benefits of taking any medication and decide what makes sense for them in consultation with their doctors, kyberlin says. Get to know yourself better. Beyond experimental drug approaches, kyberlin says a lot of progress in this space could simply come from better self-monitoring with more baseline health data about your own vitamin deficiencies, hormones, and blood sugar, among other factors. Asking your doctors to measure those baseline indicators in your 30s or 40s could better inform what actions you take later in life and let you know if urgent interventions are needed, kyberlin says, though he notes that often such testing isn't covered by health insurance in the United States. Simply popping a daily multivitamin to stave off or address unknown vitamin deficiencies is not a good idea, he cautions, since it doesn't allow people to know if they truly have deficiencies. And if they do, multivitamins may not have the appropriate level of supplements to address an individual's specific need. Make friends and calm your mind. Another key pillar for expanding your health span is connectedness with one another and with yourself. Even if you routinely interact with at least one person that you live with, like a spouse, or other social relations and experience, they remain important in our old age. Right now, without taking any drugs, we can basically maximize our exercise, nutrition, our sleep, and our social connectivity. Those are the four things that anybody who wants to can do, says Barzilai. Activities like joining a walking group or joining a group focused on hobbies you will already enjoy can make us healthier. Excuse me, please.
Sorry about that.